Welcome to the UCC Radio Special with Taoiseach and Minister for Foreign Affairs, Micheál Martin. Thank you for joining us today.
You're more than welcome indeed, Alex. Yeah.
So if we get straight into it with the crisis in Palestine at the moment.
Yeah.
So obviously the situation in Gaza is utterly tragic. A large portion of the population and student body feel strongly about the cause. How do you feel personally about it, and to what extent do you sympathise with these sentiments?
Hugely. I mean, the situation is catastrophic. And I've been to Gaza in the past after the last war in 2009. Well, not the last one, sorry, there was others in between. But when I was last foreign minister, I went there after the then war in 2009. It's a very densely populated area, and there is no way you can bomb Gaza without bombing families and killing families. And it's unacceptable. And I've been making that point from the very, very beginning. We would have been the first country out to say there should be a humanitarian ceasefire. Israel has a right to go after Hamas after what Hamas did on October the 7th, which was heinous and shocking, inhumane act. But the level of destruction of Gaza has essentially been leveled. Thousands of civilians have been killed, up to 30,000. There are 17,000 children unaccompanied in Gaza. That means not just no parents, but siblings wiped out. So we have been at all international for pressing for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire and also for unimpeded humanitarian access to the people of Gaza. It hasn't been at the scale that it needs to be in terms of food and supplies and also medical treatment for families and particularly children.
So building on that point, what do you feel is within your power and the government's power to aid the situation?
Well, we have, for example, on the humanitarian side, we have scaled up over the last year our support for UNRWA, the United Nations Relief Works Agency, which is the key humanitarian provider of education, of health and of supplies in Gaza and also in the West Bank and also in Jordan and Lebanon, wherever there are Palestinian refugees. That's a very focused and practical one at the European Union level to argue for an end to have the humanitarian ceasefire. We've made progress in terms of now there was 26 member states last week agreed that Israel should not go into Rafah, for example, and also at the United Nations in respect of supporting resolutions that would bring about or that would have as their intent the bringing about of a ceasefire. And we have done that again from the very beginning. And then we work within Europe with like-minded countries who are similar views to our own to try and advocate and push for this. And then I meet with all of the countries involved, all of the Arab nations. I've met with Israel saying there's a different way to pursue this. And that we would say to Israel, we know from our experience in Northern Ireland that military means alone do not achieve a resolution. Yeah. The only way you can do it is a political track, and there needs to be movement towards a two-state solution.
So the government voted against expelling the Israeli ambassador in Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, in diplomacy, you need to maintain diplomatic relations.
Okay.
The very people who proposed expelling the Israeli ambassador are the very same people saying to me, you should get help to get Irish citizens out of Gaza.
Yeah.
Now, we managed to get over 60 out now. That's because we have diplomatic relations. Israel control that situation.
Okay.
But as a general point about diplomacy, we have an ambassador in Israel, an Irish ambassador who advocates very strongly on all the points we have to make on the war and also in assisting Irish citizens getting out of Gaza. And I was also asked to expel the Russian ambassador, the Iranian ambassador, different times. Diplomacy is the most fundamental thing left in the world to maintain a channel of communication and dialogue. Diplomacy doesn't mean you endorse a country.
Yeah.
So I think it has been a very simplistic idea that, in my view, neither contributes to any resolution of the situation nor helps Irish citizens who could be caught up in this difficult scenario and this difficult war, because having those contacts and communication channels enables you to both argue your point but also to help citizens. And so, I mean, there could be many other countries if we were to sort of say we don't like what a particular country is doing at any particular time, you could be expelling a lot of ambassadors.
How do you feel sanctions would work? Do you think sanctions would be a genuinely plausible thing to bring about the end to this? Because with regards to Russia and Ukraine, Ireland and the EU were very quick in imposing sanctions economically and diplomatically on Russia.
We weren't very quick, but I think rightly so. I mean, I think I don't use the equivalence argument. I don't buy it. That what I mean by that is the Russia invaded Ukraine and violated Article 2 of the Charter, the United Nations Charter. And it's existential for Eastern European countries. If you're in the Baltics, Poland, they all feel it, that they're next. So it's a really fundamental issue for them. Likewise, in terms of... But the situation in terms of Israel is Israel has had a lot of support within certain EU countries, some historic. So you take Germany because of the Holocaust. They have always felt that the survival of Israel and the creation of Israel was a raison d'etre for Germany because of what they did during the war and the Holocaust and what happened then. And so there's a very historic background to the positions that Germany takes on this issue. But equally, Germany would have strong humanitarian approach to the issue also and provides a lot of humanitarian aid to Gaza, which doesn't often get recognised. So sanction, you're not going to get approval across the European Union on sanctions, even if you wanted to go down that particular route, nor will you get it in the United States.
Why do you think the United States wouldn't support sanctions?
Because Israel, historically, again, is very strong in the United States politically. And has a lot of influence through advocacy groups and so forth. That has always been a factor in US politics. And I'm just talking about the realpolitik of it. So it's a much more complex scenario that has been and situation. But that said, we have, Ireland and Spain have written to the European Commission raising the question of whether Israel is in compliance with the human rights clauses in the association agreement between the European Union and Israel. And we did that recently. And we've also called for the sanctions against the settlers in the West Bank. Hungary have held out against that. 26 other member states are in favour of sanctions against violent West Bank settlers who are displacing Palestinians in the West Bank and attacking Palestinian communities. And America has actually sanctioned in terms of travel bans and in terms of asset freezes. But unfortunately, because of Hungary's position, Europe hasn't been able to get unanimity on asset freezes in particular, which would be required under EU law, that all 27 have to be in favour of it.
Just kind of staying on the point of international law and... The Israeli Prime Minister has been quoted in saying, after Hamas is destroyed, Israel must retain security control over Gaza to ensure security of Israel. Do you think that's in direct violation of the Security Council Charter?
Yeah, we've argued, I mean, last week the Attorney General was before the International Court of Justice on a case that the UN had sought an advisory opinion from the court on the legality of Israel's occupation of Palestine. And Ireland sent in a robust legal submission in July, which I oversaw and or cleared. And then the Attorney General gave an oral presentation last week. Our view is that Israel is in violation of international humanitarian law in the West Bank and in Gaza and in the occupation generally. And we have argued that cogently in the court. And we believe the only answer is a two-state solution. But what the settlers have been doing has been making the viability of a two-state solution very challenging and very difficult because they continue to take Palestinian land and displacing Palestinian communities. So we do believe what has happened and what is happening is in violation of international humanitarian law. We also believe that the conduct of the war in Gaza, without question, has violated international humanitarian law in terms of the forced displacement of so many people, in terms of the failure to ensure adequate humanitarian aid at scale to the people of Gaza.
So Ireland and the EU have condemned heavily what's happening there, but do you not think stronger measures need to be taken? Like, do you think Israel are being affected economically by the condemnation, or do you think, like, it's the view of a lot of people that it needs to go further than that and they need to be affected economically for this to be effective?
I think Israel has, in my view, isolated itself significantly into the international world. I think the International Court of Public Opinion does matter. And I think Israel is conscious of that. Although the fact is that there's not a sufficiency of agreement around economic leveraging or using economic leveraging as a means of influencing Israel. I think we need to understand that because of the Hamas attack of October the 7th, I mean, that was a horrific, inhumane act with 1,400 people killed and people abducted, which is the worst form of all things to do, in my view. The impact of that on the Israeli psyche is not perhaps as well appreciated. And that has led, in my view, to the type of war that is currently being conducted. It doesn't excuse it. So the point I'm trying to make is, in a situation like that, economics isn't going to have a huge impact one way or the other. But what does matter, though, is if you condemn what Hamas did, well, then you have to be equally objective in terms of condemning what's happening to Gazan children, Gazan women and innocent civilians. And it seems to me that that is, and I think there are many people in Israel who are not comfortable with what's going on.
Of course, and I don't think anyone doesn't condemn what happened and what Hamas did. But the response from Israel has been disproportionate. 10,000 people were killed in Palestine, and 1,300 people were killed in the original attack. It's completely...
I think it's 30,000 now killed in Gaza.
In the original attack, though. So, do you not feel that... you personally, do you feel like economic sanctions could bring about enough pressure for the Israeli government to actually think this...
But I think the motivations are such because of that attack and because of the way Israeli politics is working, that I think those motivations will overrule anything at the moment, economics or anything else. But also I'm making the point here that from a realpolitik point of view, the prospect of getting a unified sanctions regime is not there. I mean, the unity isn't there in the European Union for such a measure. As I said earlier, the US and other countries. I mean, other countries are not as responsive. So I think the most immediate pressure point is on to keep the pressure on Israel. And obviously, the United States has leverage with Israel, although I get the feeling at times that Israel is just ignoring some of what's been said to them. Others who would be perceived to be friends of Israel, Germany and others, are doing everything they can, I know, in the background to try and stop this, but I think it's through that public pressure that would have the most immediate results. I know that the Arab nations are trying to develop a peace initiative and have done a lot of work done, which would deal with that security question, because I don't believe Israel should be left in charge of Gaza at all. I believe there has to be a Palestinian administration there. And I think then through the Arab nations and the peace initiative that they're coming up with, that there has to be some international security dimension that would deal with the security vulnerabilities of Israel, and they are there. There's no point in saying they're not after October the 7th. They are there. So I await the outcome of the publication of that agreement, and I know they're working with the United States behind the scenes because it involves Saudi Arabia, normalization with Israel, as all part of one overall deal that would also take on board recognition of Palestine.
So if economic sanctions aren't viable, how do you feel, besides just condemning what happened, what do you think is an effective strategy going forward to resolve the conflict?
I think through the international forum and fora to work with other countries to keep the pressure on Israel to desist, and particularly not to go into Rafah now, because that would be catastrophic, and also through the various mechanisms that we're using. I mean, we're still working. I mean, I say, we've written to the Commission in terms of the stabilisation agreement, but that's just two countries out of 27. At the meeting last week, Hungary held out against the sanctions on the West Bank. So it's very difficult to get agreement on some fronts. So therefore, I tend to think our energies must be focused on those which could potentially yield some results. But it is shocking what is going on. And I believe that the Israeli Prime Minister needs to listen. But then some people feel that he's on his own political survival track as well, and that's influencing his position more than the broader picture.
Just kind of going off government decision-making, a poll by Amnesty International said 62% of people believe that Ireland should have postponed diplomatic relations with Israel. I know you have your reasons and the government has its reasons for not doing so, but in a government for the people, by the people, at what point, when the majority of people polled, believe that?
Well, a poll isn't an election, though. I know, but you can't. I mean, polls change every month. They can change every 3 months. I would take strong issue with the idea that you make decision making on the basis of polls. But earlier,
it's an important part of government decision making, though.
It's not polling. Polling isn't. I'm elected by the people, right? So the government is. The government gets elected by the Dáil. The Dáil is elected by the people, and you've got 4 years to govern, and. On economics or on any issue, you can't allow yourself to be governed by monthly polls. Now, I haven't seen the amnesty poll, so I'd have to see it first, and I haven't seen the background to it. But I have a view, and if people don't agree with that view at the next general election, fine, they can articulate that view. But actually, my feedback from people is they broadly support the government's position. On we are seen as one of the most pro-Palestinian countries in the world. Yes. No, but people, we get these kind of questions that there seems to be an attempt to divide the country. Which I don't quite get. I mean, you talk to Egypt, you talk to Jordan, you talk to Saudi Arabia, you talk to any country in Europe. Just two countries are seen as those who are really pushing the boat out in terms of Palestine. Ireland, Spain, Portugal to another.
Today, people are obviously unhappy with the situation at the moment and the government's response.
But I think that's not fair. I think not everybody's unhappy with the government response.
I'm not saying everybody is, but it's a large portion of people who are.
I wouldn't agree with that.
But as a student in the student body, the general consensus of people I know, and if you look at social media, as you should take it with a pinch of salt, but there is something there in the fact that a large portion of my age group, I can only talk for my age group, are unhappy with the government's response.
But let's talk through it. I mean, the government's response has been, as I say, we're the first out to call for a humanitarian ceasefire, to vote for it at UN resolutions, to work with like-minded countries within the European Union, and to be very assertive and strong at the European Council and the European Foreign Affairs Council on it. We were the first out after the UNRWA situation where Israel alleged that 12 were involved and the UNRWA sacked them. Ireland was first out to say no aid should be stopped going to UNRWA. First, and then we came up with, and I announced 20 million 2 weeks ago. So when you go through the facts of this, objectively, there's been a lot of attempts domestically through certain quarters. The far left have been at it, very strongly trying to undermine the government. I spoke to the Norwegian foreign minister and he said the same thing to me. He said, you know, Norway would be a strong, it's not a member of the EU, but it's a very fair country and it's a country that has a lot of respect internationally in terms of humanitarian law and asserting all of that. But he gets the same sort of attempts domestically by those to sort of say government's not doing enough here, whereas internationally, including Palestine, the Palestinians will say they thank Ireland all of the time for the stance we take. So I don't think the criticism is fair, and I think the vast majority of people, my sense is the majority of people out there in the community understand that we're doing everything we possibly can in a balanced way, but also in a firm and robust way to deal. I mean, we were in the court, but a lot of people, I mean, how many people knew we were in the courts? How many people knew we had submitted a case to the International Court of Justice last July, before the war ever began? Like, Ireland has a very strong record, and the government has a very strong record in the courts, holding Israel to account. Israel don't like it. They would regard us as one of the most unfriendly countries. That's the way they put it. I disagree with them forcibly on that. I say to them, we're interested in humanitarian law, United Nations Charter. That's our touchstone. That's what we go by. We're not doing this to be popular. We're making calls that we think are fair, and we will make submissions to the courts if we think there's a legitimate case to make.
How much is Ireland's decision-making involved in America and the UK's stance towards the situation?
We make our own minds up on this. Certainly, I was in Washington 3 weeks ago, and we were over there to articulate our point, as well as the Northern Ireland issue, of course, and we meet the Friends of Ireland in terms of Northern Ireland. So we have a strong relationship with the United States. It's familial, it's migration, you know, strong Irish-American, and there's economics and so on. But there was no pushback from the US in terms of our positions, and we raised the issue of recognition. My view, the Democrats clearly want this to end, and I think the White House wanted to end. But there are constraints within America politically. As I said earlier, the strength of Israel is not to be underestimated in American politics. I saw, was just reading recently, where AIPAC and others had lobbied strongly against one particular politician sometime back in, lost his seat as a result of that. But I mean, so look, I think our views are informed by the United Nations. We're a small country, so our ultimate security is the United Nations Charter. The idea that right is not might. The idea that you should have a multilateral rules-based order. There have to be rules in terms of the world. That's where Ireland is. And so we argue on those grounds. So, and that's been really how our foreign policy is conducted in terms of both in Europe, at the United Nations, and other bodies in the World Health Organization. All of them are subsidiaries of the UN. So we strongly support the UN agencies financially, as well as commitment in terms of political involvement. We would have been responsible for updating the Sustainable Development Goals at the UN. We were asked to do that. And our time in the Security Council, we would have been very strong in humanitarian corridors in times of war. So, for example, in terms of Syria, our diplomats at the Security Council, because we had that file, insisted on keeping a humanitarian corridor open to northwest Syria to keep millions of people getting food.
Yeah.
We took a stance on Ethiopia. The Ethiopian government didn't like it, but we took the stance in terms of the humanitarian situation in Tigray. And so that's what informs Ireland's position. And we have a strong record on human rights at the UN. And, you know, we fund a lot of projects and programs through our development program and our aid program in Africa and elsewhere around human rights, gender equality, gender and conflict, for example, how women suffer most in wars. And we've been, strong advocates for that with other like-minded countries like the Norways of this world and others.
Do you think the current approach is enough?
Nothing is enough until it ends.
But what's enough to make it end?
But see, we're just one country.
I know, but I think country can still state an opinion on what's enough.
Well, we do that. What has to end is Israel has to change its mind, and Israel has to end the war, in our view. I think the hostages should be released. And I think the fact that the hostages aren't released is a huge issue in terms of the ending of it and the ceasefire. What we would like to see is a ceasefire, all of the hostages released, and then build on that ceasefire to get a permanent ceasefire and to get a political track going. Because I think the international community neglected Palestine for a long time. Ireland didn't, but the broader international community did. They thought it could contain it. And it's an issue that has huge implications, because everyone's talking about Israel, but you have Iran there. And no one in Ireland discusses the Iranian influence on the Houthis or on Hezbollah in Lebanon or indeed on Hamas. So it's a very complex issue which can spiral out of control regionally very quickly and cause huge global problems and potentially wider wars. So I think the need for a political resolution of this and to get it onto a political track that everybody agrees to is absolutely vital. And Ireland is working on that as well with other like-minded countries. And we have clear views and ideas around that. And we will continue to pressure. That's all we can do right now, is to keep the pressure on with a view to getting that humanitarian ceasefire. And I believe that is having impact. And I see it in terms of how the European Council has changed since the beginning of the war in October to now. I mean, far more countries are coming onto our view around the humanitarian ceasefire piece, around the unimpeded access of aid into Gaza, and also the need to keep UNRWA viable and to keep the funds going to UNRWA, which we have been doing and which we will continue to do.
You talk about pressure. Can you go into more specific detail on what exactly that
is? I'm talking about the public pressure in terms of the communications we have with Israel.
Will public pressure stop what they're doing and what's happening?
I think ultimately, you know, Israel is responsible for what it's doing. Okay, I think we will use all means. We will use financial, political, diplomatic means to try and bring about a humanitarian ceasefire. And we're doing that on every level. And we'll work with other countries. But Israel is not that responsive to what's been said. It has persecuted the war. It has claimed it's allowing aid in. It isn't. They've opened up some more access routes into Gaza to allow aid go in. And last week we had the UN envoy into the European Union meeting in terms of giving us an up-to-date position on what's happening in Gaza, for example. In Rafah, in terms of humanitarian aid. All of that does create pressure on Israel. And it's, you don't get a magic sort of response, or, you know, the one response. It's about pressure over time. But look, Israel has been in the prime minister and the war cabinet. Remember, there are elements in that Israeli government who are very far right.
Yeah.
And they've been persecuting this war because of what happened. But it's in our view, it's completely counterproductive. It's wrong. It's from a humanitarian point of view, from a moral point of view, I'm convinced personally this is wrong. You know, in other parts of the world, we know military solutions on their own don't work. There are other ways of dealing with an organization that's out to destroy, and Hamas has been out to destroy Israelis. So you can't say Israel doesn't have a right to go after Hamas. I'm not saying you, I'm just saying generally. I meant that generally. Yeah. But it has no right to bomb cities and towns with such recklessness, which has resulted in up to 30,000 people dead. It could be more, and that's our worry. You have a lot of people maimed. There's about 100,000 people altogether between injuries, death, and so forth. And then, like, a million and out people displaced. So no one, we're all clear in Ireland that from a humanitarian point of view, this has to stop. The challenge is how you try and keep the pressure on Israel to do that. We have pursued the legal challenges. They don't like them, but they're by definition, they take time. But nonetheless, accountability is very, very important. And even after a war, accountability is very, very important. And the decisions that people took have to be held to account by the international courts. And if you look, Israel tries to demonize the UN all the time. That's why UNRWA is under pressure. So we've pushed back strongly against that. And Ireland's been very strong on UNRWA. And if you talk to the UNRWA personnel, talk to the head of UNRWA, he'll say Ireland has given great leadership in trying to support UNRWA, notwithstanding the huge attack. And the reason UNRWA has been attacked is because it's part of the two-state solution. It's part of the right to return for Palestinian refugees who've been in Lebanon and Jordan since the Nakba. If you get rid of UNRWA, you kind of undermine that whole premise of an edifice of the right to return. So it's more political as well as, and you know, there are 30,000 people working in UNRWA, 13,000 working in Gaza. And all the names in Gaza have been given to the Israeli authorities over time. So there's full transparency there. I make those points because, like, Israel is anxious, in my view, and has a long campaign of undermining UNRWA. Yet privately, many in the Israeli authorities will acknowledge that without UNRWA, you can't run schools in Gaza, you can't run medical facilities in Gaza, and you can't have a proper distribution, wide distribution of food and supplies.
Yeah. So kind of going back on the pressures, and I know you've said your reasons and the reasons this isn't happening, but... Just on the pressures for economic sanctions, like if economic sanctions were a viable thing and the EU could get behind it, would you personally think that would work on putting the pressure on Israel enough to pull back?
I don't think so in the short term, because it hasn't... by the way, sanctions are complex in themselves because you need a lot of countries on the one page on sanctions, because if you only have a few, there'll be lots of circumvention.
But in a hypothetical sense, I know it's 50-50 to talk hypothetically, but I'm talking about if countries did get behind it, do you think personally...
Oh, it could have an impact. It could, but in Europe, you're not going to get that unanimity. But also, there'll be lots of circumvention. I mean, Russia is circumventing sanctions at the moment. You know, you have large countries who are not participants, like India, they're not participants in the sanctions regime. Quite a number in the global south are not participants in the sanctions regime. But also, by the time you'd get them through now, I mean, I think they're another form. Sanctions can work, but there's no way you're going to get any... Like at EU level, they have to be EU. Individual member states don't have either the capacity, legally, I mean, or in terms of the trade aspect of it. And that's why we've written to the Commission in respect of the stabilisation agreement, but only two of us have written it. Now, there might be others who would be sympathetic, but you're looking at 27. Like last week, 26 wanted to say unequivocally, don't go into Rafah. And 26 wanted a ceasefire in different forms. Some will call it a humanitarian pause because people are saying Hamas aren't calling for a ceasefire, or Hamas are not participating in a ceasefire. But anyway, we're clear for humanitarian reasons it should be a ceasefire. So, but even then, Hungary said No, and that's a problem for the EU because we're 27 member states. You have to have unanimity on foreign affairs matters. That's why we formed a group of 8 members to at least coordinate our work on the, in terms of motions that go before the United Nations or in terms of other aspects that come up for debate, like humanitarian access, like supporting UNRWA and so on.
We said no. Say they had said yes, what would be the way forward then?
Well, what you'd have had then on that was only on the issue of urging Israel not to go into Rafah.
Yeah.
That's all that was
but
on.
What's
the impact of that is to that's all it would be a united statement by the entire European Union to say you should not go into Rafah,
yeah.
Which carries its own weight with Israel. I'm not saying Israel might ignore, but every time Israel ignores public opinion, I think it potentially damages its standing. And I think that ultimately is a problem for Israel, I think.
So with their damaging of their standing, what will come after that? Like, what's the effect of that?
Well, the whole effect is to try and get the end result, which would be not to go into Rafah in the first instance and also to stop this carnage.
I think that's all we have time for.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you very much. Thank you indeed. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is my interview with Tánaiste and Minister for Foreign Affairs, Micheál Martin. Thanks for listening, and I hope this interview was informative and answered a lot of the student body's questions.